Liz, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are running to represent the congressional district currently occupied by Paul Tonko. Can you tell me, why do you think that this district needs a leadership change at this moment?
I filed to run for this congressional seat back in April of 2019. And the reason that I did is because I'm the mother of four adult children and a future grandmother. And I was highly concerned at the trajectory that I was seeing at the federal level with the bills that were being passed, continually encroaching on our freedoms, our liberties, the high taxes we were bringing less opportunity into our district here in the Capital Region from the federal level. And I was seeing it at the state level as well with the Democrat legislature. So I filed to run against Paul Tonko so that I can get to Washington and actually bring our Capital Region voices into Washington instead of having Washington continually represented here in the Capital Region.
Can you give me some examples of the freedoms and liberties that you think are being constrained under the current representation, under the current leadership?
Yeah, so one of the things that Paul Tonko is pushing hard on is the $93 trillion Green New Deal, which would effectively wipe out all fossil fuels. It would wipe out the oil industry, the gas industry. It would wipe out the fracking industry, which we haven't even been allowed to have in our state because of the current leadership. It would, in fact, put more taxes on us as upstate New Yorkers. We would be carrying a very heavy financial load personally. We would have to retrofit all of our homes, all of our businesses. It would effectively take 18-wheelers off of the road. That's the plan, to incorporate it with electric vehicles. It's extremely expensive. We can't afford it. And he's heavily pushing for that. He's also heavily pushing for Medicare for All, which is a socialized takeover of our healthcare system. And we have five major hospitals here in the Capital Region. We have Albany Medical Center, we have Saratoga Hospital, St. Peter's, Ellis Medicine, and St. Mary's Hospital. And the thing that is keeping our hospitals afloat right now are the reimbursements by the private health insurance companies that so many of the Capital Region citizens have purchased. I mean, 40% of the Capital Region has private health insurance plans, whether it's CDPHP, Blue Shield of Northeastern New York, MVP, or the Empire Plan, if they're a state worker. And Medicare for All would wipe out all private health insurance, and it would force everybody onto a government plan, which would plummet our hospitals. Again, like the Green New Deal, Medicare for All would increase our taxes, and it would cause us to bring home less. And effectively, it would begin to ration care, because by default, it makes providers government workers. And then the pacemakers, the defibrillators, the hip replacements, knee replacements, you know, all of those things that are afforded right now to people that are senior citizens, they're going to be the hardest hit by this. Because of the rationed care, the government is going to have to dictate who gets what and when. And I don't support that. I believe in choice. I believe that everybody does and should and will have access to good health care. But I don't believe in rationing care, and I don't believe that the government should be taking over healthcare choices for individuals.
Liz, I hope you don't mind. I just want to challenge you. Under our current system, yeah, I think it's, you know, it is scary to think about rationing care, but right now our care, and I have private health insurance, and the people making decisions about what's covered under my care are shareholders. You know, they're private companies that are operated by people who are looking to make a profit. And so my health care is being rationed all the time, but it's not by the government, it's by private insurers who want to make a profit.
So are you saying that what you qualify for and what you don't qualify for in that, are you saying that you don't have a choice in what you get to
Well,
have done?
Yeah, no, sure, I have a choice in the insurance company, but every day insurance companies are making decisions about what to cover and what not to cover. So it's in some ways, you know, I think about it as either private shareholders are making decisions about what they'll cover and what they'll pay for and what they won't, or the government is, but somebody's making that determination.
You know, it's an important point because that's one of the reasons why I'm standing strong to bring in competition and bring it across the state, to bring more competition into our state so that there are many different plans to be able to choose from based on what your specific age is, your specific situation, your specific family life. And so that's one of the things that I'm fighting for and standing up for, as well as people being able to have the choice if they would like to bring their elderly parents back onto their plans and keep adult children on their plan longer should they choose to, you know, for people who are in school. I know right now in the Obamacare mandate, you know, they have to get off at the age of 26. I actually don't think that's a good idea. I think people should have the option to pool their family plans to make them larger and have much more choice in what they're purchasing. And it's got to be much more cost effective. One of the ways that we can do that is by bringing in the competition, driving down the cost of pharmaceuticals, which actually is happening. We are bringing that cost down. We need to continue to do it more. And one of the ways that we can do that is by bringing that manufacturing out of China and bringing our pharmaceuticals back here to the United States.
What past experiences or training do you have that make you uniquely qualified to represent this district?
You know, it's funny, I get that question all of the time. And as a matter of fact, the Times Union and the Schenectady Gazette said that I was not qualified to run for Congress. And I actually take their words as a compliment because I've never been a career politician like my opponent, who's been there for 43 years and never actually had to run a business. He's never raised a family. He's never had to live, you know, paycheck to paycheck. He's never served his country in the military. As we have. I'm a veteran's wife. I'm a Blue Star mother with a son that's currently active duty fighting for our freedoms. He's not combat, but he's standing up for our country. We've run a business, and we're currently running a business. I'm an author. I'm a real estate agent, and I've been a volunteer in our school, and I've raised 4 children. So I have a lot of experience with everyday life. I know how to balance a budget. I know what it's like to live here, to work here, to try to make a paycheck, keep a business going, and watch my husband try to keep employees and not have to furlough them during a pandemic, all of which my opponent, Paul Tonko, has never had to do and actually never even took a pay cut or offered to take a pay cut during the pandemic while we saw our businesses shut down. We saw people in food lines here in New York, and he basically pulled a Biden and hid in his basement and then passed off all of our votes to Grace Meng, a representative who was going and voting on the 20th district's behalf. And she lives in, you know, out in New York City. So I believe I'm uniquely qualified because I'm not a career politician. I'm a common sense mother of 4, veteran's wife who wants to see my country do well, who wants to see my state do well, who wants to see families bring home more money, have better choices in our healthcare, be able to run our businesses without government infringement, stand up for our religious liberties. So, because right now we're watching governors across the country step in and shut down synagogues. We're watching them shut down houses of worship. And I'm going to stand up for our Constitution. So I believe I'm uniquely qualified, and I think it's an amazing compliment when somebody compares me to a career politician and asks, what have I done? I say to the career politician, what have they done? They've raised our taxes. The Capital Region looks worse than it ever has. The Capital District and the 20th District is not better off than it was for the last 10 years with Paul Tonko in office. Amsterdam is struggling and is about to file bankruptcy. It's in a fiscal crisis and a disaster. Gun violence has gone up. Shootings have gone up. He's been silent on bail reform, completely silent on bail reform. He's calling for the defunding of our police departments. And I will stand up for all of those things. We need to have safety and security back on our streets. We need to stand up for our law enforcement communities and thank our men and women in blue who keep us safe and secure. And I'm going to make sure all of these things happen.
Can I go back to the religious freedom argument that you made a few moments ago? Do you believe that there are public health measures that the government should take to protect vulnerable New Yorkers who seek to gather in large groups? Is there any measure that the government can take to put a limit on large gatherings in a religious context?
Well, maybe the first thing that the government should have done is limited the looting and the rioting and the marches that were happening.
Let's talk about that
because what you have is a double standard, and it's
And we can address that, but I am actually curious about your viewpoint about congregating for religious reasons in large groups. Do you think that the government can do anything to address those large gatherings?
I believe the government needs to stay out of the religious liberties that are afforded to us in the First Amendment of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And let's talk about the looting. Let's talk about the rioting. Let's talk about the thousands and hundreds of people that continually gathered in New York City and throughout New York State that were stealing and destroying and cutting the brake lines in our police department vehicles, which was happening in New York City. Do you think that anything there should have been done? Or do you think that it should have happened as Mayor de Blasio did and Governor Cuomo, where they asked the police to step back and people's property were destroyed? I mean, we do need to address the fact that these large groups, which were not peaceful, do you think that the coronavirus was spread at all through any of those groups?
Well, if you're asking, there is no evidence that the coronavirus was spread, and that the vast majority of folks who gathered were peaceful protesters.
That's
and
right.
Also, the police took action and arrested many, many, many demonstrators during that time. So if you're asking me, that's what I know. But
3,000 police officers were 3,000 police officers were assaulted since May during this pandemic with the looting and the rioting. Businesses were destroyed. People's livelihoods were destroyed. And if the government in the state of New York and the Democrat governors are not going to get the looting and the rioting under control that we have seen, they have no business in regulating in any way, shape, or form houses of worship like we are seeing happen in Queens and in Brooklyn.
Interesting.
With the synagogues.
Gotcha. So just to lighten this up a little bit, when you're not running for public office, what do you enjoy doing?
Well, thank you. I was a licensed realtor before that. And so I was in the real estate business and enjoyed it very, very much. I was new to it. I didn't get my license. I gotten it in 2017. So I was brand new. I thought it was very exciting. I love our capital region and had been an author and had helped other people on their campaigns. So that's really what I was doing and pursuing at that time before I decided to run for office.
You were an author. What did you write?
I wrote a book, How to Be Salt and Light, The Christian's Guide to Voting, specifically geared to the Christian community, helping them to get involved in the voting process across the country. And you may well remember that in 2016, we had the largest evangelical turnout in history for the presidential race.
Got it. So interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing your views on this race and your candidacy with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it as well.